We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
97.1 FM Talk.
On-demand audio.
A couple of big decisions from the Supreme Court today, and obviously on the heels of everything that happened last week and the threats to the Supreme Court justices. Josh Hammer, the opinion editor for Newsweek, is with us this afternoon. He wrote a great piece about Justice Thomas. How are you, Josh? Welcome back.
Always great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
I want to talk about Dobbs and the gun case in particular, but this EPA case I really have not gotten into today, and this is a big decision, isn't it?
It is a huge decision. So it's a 6-3 decision. The Chief Justice has the opinion. The Chief Justice is usually more reliable than he often is when it comes to kind of economic regulatory issues, and sure enough, that was the case here. So they had an opportunity to go even further, I should say that. They could have made a ruling potentially on Chevron doctrine grounds, potentially, if they really want to go back to first principles, potentially even trying to revamp the entire so-called non-delegation doctrine in the first place. Instead, they did it on the somewhat narrower standard of what in recent years they've taken to calling the major questions doctrine. So it's kind of strip away the legalese. What this basically means is that when Congress does not very, very clearly authorize an agency to take large action, an action that could kind of shape an entire industry, as the case may be in this litigation, in kind of the energy space, then the agency cannot go ahead and do that. So specifically, they said that Section 111D of the Clean Air Act just cannot be interpreted the way that the Obama administration did when it devised the so-called Clean Power Plan in 2015. The Clean Power Plan was basically this massive EPA power grab that allowed the Obama administration to try to devise emission caps throughout the country. And it kind of brings me back to an old quip from the late Justice Antonin Scalia. I think he said this in the 1990s. It was years ago at this point, where he famously said that Congress does not hide elephants in mouse holes. They do not kind of put these massive delegations of power into these tiny provisions where you have to kind of scrutinize with a very overly blurry lens to get at that result. So it's a good opinion. I mean, it definitely will have the effect of reining in the EPA, which obviously is one of the most noxious of all the alphabet soup administrative state agencies. So in the long run, we'll see if they go further. But for now, it's a very good opinion.
But Josh Hammer, why do you hate the planet? Because AOC tweeted, catastrophic. A filibuster carve-out is not enough. We need to reform or do away with the whole thing. She's talking about the Supreme Court. For the sake of the planet, Josh, Elizabeth Warren, our planet is on fire, and this extremist Supreme Court has destroyed the federal government's ability to fight back. I mean, between this, the gun case from last week, and the, you know, hysteria over Dobbs, there have been some Hall of Fame-level tweets by our friends on the left in this past week.
Yeah, it's a really remarkable string of cases, isn't it? I mean, there was a qualified loss, say, in the Remain in Mexico policy immigration challenge, a qualified loss. I mean, that litigation is actually not over yet. But yeah, guns, abortion, public religion, as far as the case out of Maine, the school choice case, and this Coach Kennedy case at Washington State, and this EPA case, this really has been the most remarkable Supreme Court term in many ways in my adult lifetime. And I'm not even sure what second place would be, to be honest with you. So this has really just been a remarkable stretch from a legal conservative perspective over the past week and a half or so. But to your question, one thing that I have observed, and I've been thinking about this a lot over the past few days, the left has forgotten what it is like to lose. They have become so accustomed and habituated to winning in presidential elections, where conservatives, obviously, and Republicans in particular, have you know, lost more frequently over than they've won over the past 30, 40 years. And then obviously in the Supreme Court space in particular, the left has just forgotten what it is like to lose, let alone lose on these heavy hitting cultural civilizational cases. And the flip side of that, I think, is that the right has forgotten what it is like to win.
That
every so often, our side is actually entitled to a victory. But yes, they've been melting down. But, you know, we'll see what happens this summer. I'm obviously praying that it doesn't erupt into too much violence.
You know, you made a great point in the column when it comes to Justice Thomas. And, I haven't dissected these opinions over the course of the decades, maybe not as closely as you. But as a talk show host, I talk a lot. But you said his most impactful and culturally salient writings have actually come in dissent, right? Which is absolutely true. But that changed a bit in the last week.
Yeah, it did. Look, Justice Thomas, in my opinion, I said this in the column, he is the greatest living American. I've been saying this for years. It is increasingly obvious to me that it is the case. You know, if the listeners of your show, Mark, have not watched this fabulous documentary that came out 2 years ago in 2020 entitled Creating Equal, Clarence Thomas in His Own Words. It's a fabulous documentary. It really kind of tells his whole life story. It is such an inspiring kind of rags to riches. You know, he grew up dirt poor in the Jim Crow South. But in any event,
There's a strong Missouri connection, too, by the way, as you know, here. Right. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry, Josh.
Oh, yeah. No, he worked with Jack Danforth, obviously, out in Jefferson City. Yep. Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, a lot of his greatest writings over the decades have come in dissent because up until just the past couple of years, really, he has not had a solid originalist majority on the court. Of course, obviously, some of the current justices still wobble a little bit, but Clarence Thomas is the most consistent of them. And it's true. I mean, he has had any number of just blistering dissents over the years. But until the Bruin Second Amendment case last week, until he wrote this really, really beautiful 63-page majority opinion that established for the first time in the court's history that you have a right not just to keep arms in your home, but actually to bear arms outside the home. Until then, I'm not sure I can pinpoint a really defining majority opinion of his. So he finally has that. It's a beautiful, beautiful opinion, especially for those of us who are gun owners and really cherish that right. It's just great stuff, and it made me so profoundly happy.
By the way, for those people who might not want to read a Supreme Court opinion, I don't know if you saw this today, but in the New York Times, there was a piece by a woman named Laura Atkins, who in the piece, she says she grew up here in the Ozarks, or maybe not too far from here. I'm a New York City liberal, and I want a gun. And she goes into a description of how she has a partner that has threatened her. And it's a real, I can't believe the New York Times printed it, Josh, because it's a really good piece talking about why that's so important.
Well, I didn't see this piece. I'll have to go check it out. It sounds like it's a good one. You know, there's been any number of evidence over the years, and I don't have that data handy, but, you know, Ann Coulter has written about this. She's a huge fan of making this point over and over again in her columns, Ann, is that women disproportionately tend to benefit from concealed carry laws. I mean, another Missourian, Dana Lash, makes this point over and over again as well, because women, by definition, obviously, are the fairer sex. They are the weaker sex. And when a woman feels like a man is harassing her or threatening her or showing up on her doorstep, she might need a restraining order or something. There is no better way to defend yourself, obviously, than with a weapon. I mean, it's kind of common sense almost, isn't it?
Yeah.
So but I'll go ahead and check that off.
You should read it. I think it's real good. Then on the other side of the Thomas stuff, you have this unhinged behavior like Lori Lightfoot in Chicago.
If you read Clarence Thomas' concurrence, he said,
you know, I've heard a lot about rights, and I've heard a lot of criticism about democracy falling apart when it's actually, Josh, isn't it quite the opposite? This returns these responsibilities to the states, and people get to vote on different issues and different lawmakers, right? Isn't that democracy?
That's certainly my definition of democracy. I mean, it seems to me increasingly so that when the left says our democracy, what they really have in mind is just liberal progressive policy outcomes, right? Whether it's this decision, because what you said is correct, Mark. I mean, the Dobbs decision on abortion is a fundamentally democratizing decision. I mean, it literally deconstitutionalized a faux, fake, purported, fabricated constitutional quote-unquote right and kicks it back to we the people. It kicks it back to the states to be decided upon in fundamentally democratic fashion. So it is a quintessentially democratic decision. But, you know what it reminds me of a little bit? I was over in the country of Hungary back in February, And after Prime Minister Orban won, like, whatever, like his third or fourth term in April, you know, the left said the same thing, like, oh, this is anti-democracy. Well, you know what? The people voted for that. I mean, like, whether it's here or there or anywhere else in the world, when the people have a say, when they vote at the ballot box, that is democracy, whether you like the results or not.
Well, and there's this effort on the part of much of, I'd say most of the legacy media, to completely discard, for example, people in my part of the country. I was mentioning this. I played some of the audio from Wanda Sykes, who's a comedian, was on the Colbert Show talking about, you know, the problem is the red states, right? And that's the notion from a lot of the Hollywood elite and even the folks that are on media, you know, the coastal elites. They forget that there are a lot of people. Look, we got liberals here as well. But this used to be a part of the country that had a lot of pro-life Democrats, you know, down in Kentucky, down in Tennessee. They don't even exist anymore.
Yeah, so it's really interesting because, again, another reason the left is freaking out is because if you look at these cases over the past week and a half, again, we're talking here about public religion, abortion, guns. I mean, it doesn't get much more culture war, obviously, than God, guns, and abortion. And these are just issues where the mainstream media, the corporate press, which is disproportionately based, obviously, in coastal enclaves like New York City, Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, they are just so woefully out of touch with what people in a state like Missouri believe. And many times, I think, and I've noticed it in my personal experience going back to law school, on a lot of these issues, liberals are incapable not just of agreeing with, but of understanding the rationale and the logic behind the conservative position. So put another way, let's say guns, for instance. I've had so many liberal friends say to me, oh, you oppose XYZ gun control, you must therefore support dead children in school. Or, right. You know, on the abortion issue, like, oh, you oppose, you know, liberalized abortion access, you must want women to be in the kitchen popping out five kids all day long.
Right,
I mean,
right.
Yeah. They are oftentimes literally incapable of understanding it because they live in a bubble, like you said.
What's going to happen then as a result of this? Because they're, I mean, you got AOC, Elizabeth Warren, they're talking about dismantling the Supreme Court. They want a court pack, get rid of the filibuster. There's a narrow window to do some of these things because the election's coming up in November. But obviously there's pressure on the administration, on Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi right now. Can they do anything that would be, you know, something that would have to be reversed in the future? What do you think happens here?
I don't think they will be able to do anything on the filibuster. I certainly hope not. I mean, the timing is remarkably short-sighted, isn't it? I mean, literally coming a handful of months before Republicans will retake the House and all but assuredly retake the U.S. Senate as well. So I have to imagine that part of this is just trying to kind of rally the troops for this November. I'm kind of a crass, like, head-counting measure. I mean, I would be surprised, personally, if Joe Manchin or Kyrsten Sinema went along.
Yeah, I don't think they would.
And obviously, yeah, and Joe Biden would need both of them, obviously. So I don't think this is going to happen. This seems to me like a man who is desperate to just throw mud at the wall and see what sticks. But I could be wrong. I mean, obviously, this Democratic Party is not your father's Democratic Party. So, you know, they keep on getting more radical day in and day out. I do predict Sinema and Manchin will hold strong there, but I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be beyond shocked if they didn't.
Josh Hammer from Newsweek, he's the opinion editor, is with us. How would you handicap what effect this might have, Dobbs in particular, on the elections in November?
I don't think it's going to have a huge impact, Mark, to be honest with you. I think Democrats and the media would prefer to have a huge impact. But abortion polling in America is kind of famously schizophrenic. So it's true that a majority of Americans have long said that they favor upholding and not overturning Roe versus Wade. But there are just many polls that show that Americans want way more restrictions on abortion than the Roe abortion regime allowed. So put another way, I think most Americans just didn't understand what it means to, quote unquote, overturn Roe, which just means obviously to kick it back to the states. So, again, this just strikes me as an issue where whether it's Meet the Press on NBC or the New York Times, whatever, again, they live in an echo chamber. They live in an echo chamber where everyone that they talk to is pro-abortion. They do not understand. They do not empathize with. They do not even fully intuit what the precepts of the pro-life argument are. They just have no idea.
And that echo chamber is getting larger. You know, it's expanding, unfortunately. Now, one more question here on the leak, because I tweeted this out yesterday. Are we ever going to find out who leaked this decision?
Man, I hope so.
I mean,
I
know.
I wrote a piece for The Spectator a few weeks ago, and I said the title of the piece was Hunt Down the SCOTUS Leaker. I mean, I'm happy that you're tweeting about it, because up until you just told me that right now, I feel like I was the last person in America who still cared about this. But it's still a really big deal. I mean, like, as joyous as we all should be about the Dobbs outcome, we cannot forget about the fact that this thing almost didn't happen because of an unprecedented intimidation campaign culminating in a literal assassination attempt against a swing justice. So they have to ferret out the leaker. I kind of half expected it to be announced today because today was the last day of the term.
Right, right.
And apparently they still didn't. So,
well, maybe it's a Friday thing going into the weekend thing. We'll see. Holiday weekend, they release the leaker. One more thing, Josh, that you mentioned, because this is something to look forward to in the next. KBJ was sworn in today, so now we have Breyer has stepped out of the Supreme Court. What are the cases in the next term? Is there an affirmative action case that is likely to come before the court?
Yeah, that's the big one. Affirmative action is coming before the court next term. They accept the cases out of both Harvard and the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. So that's one private school, one public school. So they kind of can cover the bases as far as the 14th Amendment is concerned there. That's a big one. And that's why actually in my Clarence Thomas column last week that you were kind enough to mention here, when I talked about how this is Clarence Thomas's kind of clear defining majority opinion to date on the Second Amendment, I closed that column by saying, well, you know what, let's also just wait to see what happens next term. Yeah. Because if there's one issue that has riled up Clarence Thomas more than anything else, probably since his, you know, in his entire tenure on the court, it is race conscious admissions program, just race consciousness.
Oh,
in
absolutely.
General. Clarence Thomas stands for one proposition. It is that we are made equal in the eyes of God, signed the Declaration of Independence, full stop, end of story. So I have my eyes squarely on those cases out of Harvard and North Carolina next term.
Hey, just a personal question as we close. Who are you having dinner with tonight? I ask that because the last time you were on, you had dinner with Ilya Shapiro, and he rolled into St. Louis the next day and came on the show. So I'm expecting another Reardon Show guest might be on the agenda for tonight. So let me know, okay?
I'm actually funny enough getting dinner tonight with my friend Carol Markowitz, the New York Post columnist who lives down here in Florida with me.
You know what's funny about that? Okay, here's what's funny about that. I swear to God, tell Carol we're trying to get a hold of you. She wrote a great piece this week about the airline industry getting $50 billion, you know, and still sucking. So, see, this may work out for the Mark Reardon Show. Josh, thank you so much. Enjoy your dinner. Take care.
Get more at 971talk.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.